Hot Rod.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today is January 16th, 2026. And our top story this morning is once again the AI bubble, the AI mania, front and center in the news cycle. We haven't talked about this in a couple of days, but it's a big one this morning. We've been talking all week about how there's no memory available. We've got a shortage of memory. We talked earlier, maybe like last month, about Blue Owl Capital pulling out of funding certain data center projects. The money supply is drying up to pay for these data centers somewhat. Now we're talking about power today. A lot of energy headlines, and AI has their fingerprints all over it. In particular, this story about President Trump's new plan to alleviate affordability problems in the energy sector by forcing PJM, which stands for Penn Jersey Maryland, that is the biggest grid operator in the United States. They operate the power grid, pretty much the whole power grid in the Northeast, everything from Northern Virginia just up to New York, like not quite into New England, and then as far west as Illinois. It's a really big grid operator. About a quarter of the country's population lives within the PJM grid, and President Trump is trying to force them to hold a 15-year capacity auction to try to force big tech companies to pay upfront the cost of building new power plants to power their data centers. All right, now look, guys, I know I'm going to get all these like, oh, you're always so negative comments today. Look, I'm a realist. I'm an engineer. When someone says, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we do this? I can't help but say obstacles A, B, C, and D need to be overcome, and whether or not that makes this idea realistic or not. Yes, there is a such thing as a stupid idea. Whoever told you there's no such thing as stupid ideas obviously never heard of holding a 15-year capacity auction to try to get power plants built to power data centers that are already in operation. So let's talk about some of the reasons why. First of all, a capacity auction that represents about 15 to 30% of the finished cost of electricity. Capacity auctions is how the grid ensures reliability. They hold these auctions and they pay upfront prices to some of these power plants in order for them to be reliable, rewards them for reliability, a way to ensure that they're going to be there during times of need. And they're paid upfront. They're paid an additional cost. The reliable operators do this. In particular, base load like coal, gas, and nuclear tend to be the biggest beneficiaries of capacity auctions because they're the most reliable power supplies. And then in exchange, if for whatever reason these power plants go down for maintenance or are not available when that capacity is needed, they have to pay big penalties for not being able to meet those commitments. Typically, these capacity auctions are done about 4 years in advance, right? For the next 4 years, if we have a capacity auction right now, it'll be for 2030 capacity. They're talking about doing this for 15 years here, and they're trying to do this in order to get a power plant built. They're hoping to raise $15 billion. Now, again, $15 billion from this auction for power 15 years from now, enough money to maybe get one traditional nuclear power plant built. The reactors that we built down in Georgia cost about $15 billion a piece and led to one of the biggest bankruptcies in history, by the way. So maybe you can raise enough power to build one power plant. If you start construction right now, which is not realistic because there's typically like five freaking years of NRC and regulator review, and the protesters have their silly marches and they chain themselves to bulldozers because you can't get anything built in this country. All right. Even if none of that bullshit happens, it's still going to take 10 years to get this power plant built. You might raise enough money to build one of them, maybe, assuming we've gotten better at it, which there's no data to support that. And even then, we're talking about trying to do this to power data centers that are only going to last, 4 to 6 years, maybe, that are already in operation. And this is all being done. Why? Because we need to make it look like we're doing something about affordability, because affordability is going to be front and center in people's minds when they go into the voting booth during the midterms because, hey, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but over the last 5 years, we had this whole inflation thing going on and life has gotten a hell of a lot more expensive. And despite paying lip service, the powers that be, which includes both Democrats and Republicans, have done precisely jack shit about the affordability problem. As a matter of fact, at every turn, they do everything within their power to make it worse. And now they're worried about how we might vote. Okay, good luck with that. All I can tell you guys is this 15-year capacity auction, the math doesn't math. The math ain't mathing, guys. It's just not going to work. Before we get into all the other energy stories of the day, there's another big one. Shout out to Bob Coleman, CEO of Idaho Armored Vaults, spotted this one. TD Securities had their model commodities portfolio back on January 7th. They put out a big silver short recommendation. That's interesting because they charge buku bucks for access to this model portfolio where you can copy their trades. And, well, that didn't work out so well for them. As a matter of fact, that trade blew up just a few days ago. We'll talk about that one. All right. Now let's talk about some more of these energy stories. But first, the silly political theater happening down in Venezuela. Maria Machado has gifted her Nobel Peace Prize to President Trump. And therapists of the world, clear your schedule because the liberals are going to be clutching their pearls and they are just going to need to, they're going to need to process all this. You can already see them just freaking out. It's a stupid headline. She's trying to buy her way into Caracas by bribing narcissist Trump with her peace prize, which he wanted. It's just a ridiculous freaking story, but there it is. And I have to mention, unbelievable, my moderator Mish, it was about a week ago, predicted this exact event during one of our phone calls, that she would give her peace prize to Trump to try to bribe him into installing her as the new president of Venezuela. And I saw this story this morning. I couldn't help but say, oh, my God, Mish, that was an awfully specific and strikingly accurate geopolitical prediction that you made a week ago. Bravo, sir. Really impressive. It's a stupid story, but holy crap, did you nail that one? Also going on related to Venezuela, we got two other stories about energy this morning. First of all, the U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright is out saying that Venezuela is getting 30% higher prices for their oil since Maduro was removed. No details were really provided to support, no numbers or anything, but what I suspect is that 30% is the cost of skirting sanctions, is why Venezuela is getting a higher price. When you use shadow fleet tankers who use fake transponders and sell into markets where if you got caught doing it, the IMF or whoever, World Bank's going to seize all your money and freeze you out of the SWIFT system. Apparently that comes at a substantial cost. And so it's a little bit of this selling point that they're using. Hey, Venezuela, play nice in the sandbox and you might get some more money for your oil and our companies may help you get it out of the ground for cheaper. Now, the flip side to that coin, there is a cost associated with that for the United States, besides, you know, the whole like seizing people in the middle of the night thing. Harold Hamm, he's the billionaire founder of Continental Resources. He has announced that he is halting drilling in the Bakken Shale, which is this big oil deposit in North Dakota and Montana, that area in the Midwest. This for the first time in years, he will be halting all drilling in the Bakken Shale. The break-even cost to produce oil in the Bakken is roughly right around where oil prices are today. And the fact that he's halting these rigs is just another data point suggesting that the world is about to be oversupplied with oil. And if we're going to unlock all of this Venezuelan oil and put that into the market, which will admittedly take years to materialize, but the fact that this guy is halting drilling. This is one of the most famous wildcatters in the country. He's halting drilling in the Bakken because he doesn't think those prices are going up. He thinks they're going further south. And it just goes to show you, you know, yeah, this thing in Venezuela that we did was a big geopolitical power shift. And there's all kinds of benefits for the United States and all kinds of downside for the Russians and for the Chinese. But at the same time, it's not so clear cut as it used to be because the U.S. is now one of the biggest producers of oil in the world. And if oil prices are heading lower, while that's generally better for the American people who use a lot of oil, there's also a downside. U.S. producers will be hurt from that, and already you're starting to see those effects. Now, we've got more U.S. energy news. Japan's Mitsubishi buying $7.5 billion worth of U.S. shale gas resources. That story breaking today. So while the shale oil drillers are starting to shut down operations, the shale gas is still running hand over fist, full throttle, whatever you want to say, whatever metaphor you want to use. The Japanese are spending a lot of money to get a foothold in U.S. natural gas. Again, the AI bubble has its fingerprints all over that one. Let's see what else we got this morning. Oh, also in energy, New York's Empire Offshore Wind Project. That is back on after a judge ruled that the federal government cannot halt all offshore wind development over national security concerns. We talked about that one on the stream a couple of weeks ago. That was never a realistic thing. President Trump just hates wind. But, you know, that's another thing I got to say. I have to comment on this Empire Wind story. And another reason why this 15-year auction is going to fail. How do you get a power plant built in this country? Let's say you want to build a nuclear plant. Okay, great. The Republicans are in power. We love nuclear. Good. Let's get, here's all this money. We're going to change the regulatory structure, get it done. Then a Democrat takes over and all of a sudden, no, we're ordering the NRC to halt the review. Or no, we're going to order this guy I installed at the NRC to cancel Yucca Mountain. So now there's nowhere to put the spent nuclear fuel. Okay, that's political wind shift. You can't get anything done. Or let's say you wanted to build a natural gas plant. The Republicans are like, yeah, we're going to order the Department of the Interior to steamroll the license applications for the pipelines. And then there's a protest and then there's an election and the power swifts and we go to the Democrats and the Democrats say no pipelines. Oops, now your natural gas plant is worthless. On the flip side, let's say you want to build a big renewable plant to try to power your data center. Great, the Democrats are in power. We love renewables. Here's some subsidies to help you pay for it. We get halfway under construction. We're about to connect it to the grid. Now a Republican is in power. He says, I don't like wind, and therefore national security reasons, we're going to order you to cancel your project. How do you get anything built in a country with such bipolar political personality disorders that depending on who's in power, they just arbitrarily cancel billion-dollar projects? And now we're like, yeah, 15 years from now, we'll get a power plant built. We want to force big tech to pay for it up front. Good luck with that one. Empire Wind, that one's back on the table now too. We got a couple of other stories. Saks Fifth Avenue has officially filed Chapter 11. The debt from that company is now trading at 1 cent on the dollar. Amazon's stake in the company is worthless. Porsche has seen their sales fall the most since the GFC after an unbelievably stupid bet on electric vehicles. Who could have seen that one coming? And $15 billion in farm aid for specialty crops. That's being pushed through Congress right now in addition to the $12 billion. That was announced a few weeks ago. And Cambodia's scam city. We got a cool article about this one. Somebody left me a super chat a couple of days ago about the Prince Group. And I didn't know the information on that one. So I saw this article today that my moderator, Mish, found. Another good catch, Mish. So we'll be talking about scam city in Cambodia. That one is interesting. Stick around for the end of the show. Guys, we got a lot to talk about. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head? Let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button. You new guys, hit that subscribe button. Say, come back tomorrow. Have your coffee with the melon heads because we do this one every single day. That is some good wake-up juice. Just gets the day going. S&P 500 right now is up 11 points, 0.17% to the upside off its highs of the morning. The Dow is up by 12 points, 0.02% to the upside. And the NASDAQ is up 131 points, 0.5% higher. So all three indexes are in the green this morning, tech leading the way. The dollar is a little bit weaker here, off by 8 basis points, 99.27 for the DXY. Looking over at the bond market, we got yields are mostly higher. The 30-year yield is at 4.821%. That's up 3.5 basis points. The 10-year is up 3 points to 4.192. The 2-year at 3.576%. That's up a point and change. And the 1 month is up 2 points at 3.655%. Looking over at Bitcoin, $95,347 off the highs that we saw a few days ago. We went as high as 97, almost 98,000 back on Tuesday. Now we're sitting here about 95. Bitcoin's had a pretty good week here as the debasement trade has become front page news once again. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got metals are in the red once again, although metals held up strikingly well yesterday, considering the price smash everybody was expecting. Also worth pointing out, today is options expiration. Keep an eye on those silver prices on that SLV ETF. Could have some fireworks into options expiration into the close today. But for now, spot gold, $4,606, down by $9 or 0.2% lower, but still above that 4,600 threshold. February COMEX gold futures, 4,610. That's off by $13 or 0.29% lower. Spot silver, meanwhile, at 89.17, down by $3.31 or 3.6% lower, but still looking really good at 89 after two attempted price slams. We're still hovering right around that 90 level. We hit a high overnight of 92.80. That level is important. We'll talk about that in a second with this TD Securities story. March COMEX futures at 88.86 for March silver. That's down $3.46 or 3.75% lower. But you know what? I like the shiny. Copper's down by 2.5%. Platinum down 4.2%. Palladium down 4.5%. All the metals are in the red this morning. Crude oil is green, though, $60.05, up 86 cents, or 1.45% for February WTI crude. A lot of energy headlines today. But before we get to the energy, let's talk about this one from TD Securities. They put this out back in on January 7th. Shout out to Bob Coleman from Idaho Armored Vault at Profits Plus ID on Twitter, who put this one out. This is their big short recommendation. Right, you pay TD Securities buku bucks for access to their model portfolio, and they give you such bangers like short silver at $78 an ounce. Oh, how's that working out for you? Now, remember, that was January 7th, and they said all these things, right? Like, oh, retail has FOMO'd, the fundamentals have already turned, but prices haven't. They were anticipating a 40% decline in the price of silver over the ensuing few days. Their target price level was $40 an ounce. That's almost a 50% decline. Instead, it went to 93. Now, the important thing to note about this TD Securities thing is look at their stop loss levels here. I don't know if you can see it. It's a grainy picture. But they had a stop loss trigger at $92.50 an ounce, which means TD Securities, they already got stopped out on their silver short recommendation. We went pretty much right up to that level and then sold off twice, which means we would have triggered that heck of a trade there, TD Securities. Once again, I like the shiny. Bankers betting against silver has not gone well for the last 2 years or so. All right, here's the big story this morning. Trump moves to make tech giants pay for surging power costs. Again, guys, light on the details here. I think this is really just theater aimed at making it look like we're doing something about surging power costs. This will have no effect on the price of electricity anytime soon. But there it is. President Trump and the governors of several U.S. northeastern states agreed to push for an emergency wholesale electricity auction that would compel technology companies to effectively fund new power plants. The unprecedented plan, set to be announced Friday morning, seeks to address growing tensions over how the nation can supply electricity to power-hungry data centers seen as necessary to help win the global AI race. I am so sick of, we must win the global AI race. FOMO in the data centers because China. All right, good luck. If China wants to light their own money on fire, we should let them. Who cares? There is no AI race. Oh yeah, hurry up. We need to build the best shitbot because otherwise the Chinese will be telling the world to glue their pizzas together and we can't have that. Oh no. Without simultaneously hiking utility bills for homes and businesses. By the way, there is no way to do that. You cannot build a massive energy load without affecting energy prices. That's how supply and demand works. Demand goes up, supply stays the same, price goes higher. And with energy and power, supply does not change on a dime. It takes years for new energy supplies to materialize. The Trump administration and some U.S. governors plan to direct grid operator PJM Interconnection to hold an auction for tech companies to bid on 15-year contracts for new electricity generation capacity. 15-year contracts. Hey, who wants to buy power for the next 15 years for a data center that will be lucky to last five? Anybody? Anyone? Some of you guys in the back? No? Okay. If the auction proceeds as envisaged, tech giants would pay for power over the duration of the contracts, whether they use the electricity or not, providing secure revenues for years in a market notorious for price volatility and generator bankruptcies. The auction would deliver contracts supporting the construction of some $15 billion worth of new power plants, said a White House official granted anonymity to detail the approach. And again, that $15 billion, that's enough for maybe 1 gigawatt worth of new nuclear power plants, $15 billion, just based on what it cost to build the last gigawatt, which has only gone up, if anything. This is, you're pissing in the wind here, guys. This is not going to make any difference in what these data centers are doing. Still, the representatives of PJM won't be in attendance when the plan is laid out on Friday. We don't have a lot to say about this, PJM spokesman Jeffrey Shields said by email. We were not invited to the event they are apparently having tomorrow, and we will not be there. So apparently the people who are going to hold this auction, the people who are going to implement this, weren't consulted, weren't invited to the announcement, probably because the first thing they said was this won't work. The same thing I'm saying, but go ahead and have your announcement and, you know, placate the masses, make it look like you give a shit about people's power prices going up while simultaneously doing everything in your power to blow more money into this bubble to keep these worthless data centers being built. They all lose money. None of them are profitable. All they do is drive up power costs for poor people while flooding the internet with fake dog shit content. Oh, but hey, we're going to do a 15-year power auction. That's going to solve all our problems. Good God. All right. Meanwhile, Venezuelan oil fetching 30% higher price, U.S. Energy Chief says, after first sale worth $500 million. The U.S. is securing about 30% higher prices for Venezuelan crude, Energy Secretary Chris Wright said Thursday, as the country has started selling oil from the Latin American nation after capturing its former president, Nicolas Maduro. Washington has completed its first sale of Venezuelan oil, valued at about $500 million, according to the U.S. Department of Energy spokesperson, with more expected in the coming days and weeks. We're getting about 30% higher realized price when we sell the same barrel of oil than they sold the same barrel of oil 3 weeks ago, Wright said, at a U.S. Energy Association event without specifying prices. All right, so let's apply a generous fudge factor here. This is a politician talking. So when they say 30% higher realized prices, I think conservatively, you can probably knock 5% right off the top of that and just say they're inflating the numbers. That being said, about 25%, you could make the argument, the valid argument, that that is the cost of skirting U.S. sanctions. That's the discount the Venezuelans were forced to sell their oil at because of the sanctions and using shadow fleet tankers and selling to the Iranians and the Russians. So they're getting more money per barrel that comes out of the ground. That's the point of this article. It's meant to be a little bit more of the carrot. There's more to be gained through cooperation than resistance. Now, that being said, there's still a lot of questions around, will U.S. oil majors make the investments in this Venezuelan oil, and can they even do it? Venezuela's oil problem is not technical, and it is not commercial. It's fundamentally human and political, said Baron Lamar, former head of trading at Petronas and co-founder of Index. Until investors have confidence in long-term political continuity, capital will remain cautious, incremental, and conditional, he said. So the object of this story, the 30% higher prices, is meant to convince the Venezuelans to provide some of that long-term political confidence in order to clear the way for those investments to be made and to get the oil flowing. Speaking of long-term political confidence, Norway stunned after Mikado gifts Nobel Peace Prize medal to Trump. I cannot believe this is a real story. And Mish, I cannot believe you predicted this to a T a week ago. Absolutely nailed it. Look, guys, I mean, in the last couple of days, in the same comments of the same stream, I've been accused of being both MAGA and of having TDS at the same time over the same stream. So, you know, I'm pissing off people on the extremes of both wings. All I can say is, after bad-mouthing this stupid plan for the 15-year capacity auction, all I can say, it is hilarious. Just read this Bloomberg article. I'm not going to go through it, but the pearl clutching and they're like, oh my God, how could they do this? How could they politicize the Nobel Peace Prize after we gave it to Al Gore and then we gave it to Barack Obama over nothing? Oh yeah, now we're politicizing the Nobel Peace Prize. That's freaking adorable. That being said, this is this lady stoking Trump's ego. Of course it is. She's trying to bribe her way into Caracas. She wants to be the leader of Venezuela, and President Trump is going to install the next leader of Venezuela, or at least he's going to try to. So how do you, what do? You do the same thing Tim Cook did with his gold brick and a piece of plexiglass attached to it. You give the president what he wants to much fanfare so he can be like, oh, my goodness, this is so unexpected. Wow, well, thank you so much. And then he gives you what you want. That's what this is. But it's a story. That's hilarious. All right, now for the unintended consequences of that Venezuelan oil possibly flowing someday soon. You can already see it with this story. Harold Hamm to halt drilling in the Bakken Shale on lower oil prices. Harold Hamm, the billionaire wildcatter who helped kick off the U.S. shale oil revolution, said he's about to shut down drilling in North Dakota's Bakken for the first time in decades because of low crude prices. This will be the first time in over 30 years that Harold Hamm has not had an operation with drilling rigs in North Dakota. Hamm, the founder of shale driller Continental Resources, said in a telephone interview Thursday, there's no need to drill it when margins are basically gone. It's a significant milestone for the Bakken. The shale patch in North Dakota is where Hamm, who's now 80, first proved that drilling and fracking techniques could be successfully applied to previously untouchable oil reserves. The fracking revolution ushered in a new growth era in U.S. oil, and the country went on to become the world's top producer. The average well in the Bakken requires a minimum of $58 a barrel to cover costs and generate a small profit, according to a report from Bloomberg. That's up almost 4% from a year earlier, largely due to escalating expenses for drillers. All right, so break even at $50 a barrel, guys, and here we are sitting WTI at $59.94. So these guys are just barely making a profit right now. The number of rigs drilling across the U.S. has dropped by 15% over the past month, led by the cutting of 60 rigs in the Permian Basin, the largest and most productive oil basin. A lot of people are assessing their activity in all the basins, said Hamm, who also has oil field assets in Oklahoma and Texas, among other locations. So you can see the lower price of oil and the prospects for even lower prices of oil are already starting to affect American production. That will affect American jobs, American exploration and production companies. It's also worth pointing out that $58 a barrel break-even number, that's not a switch where below 58, everybody turns off, above 58, everybody turns on, right? That's the average. So, you know, half of them are higher than that, half of them are lower than that. What happens is as you approach 58, you start to see the marginal, the most expensive producers shut down. Once you get below 58, you start to see a lot of them shut down, but some of them will stay in operation because some wells are more profitable than other. But that is an important threshold. And we are hovering right around that level right now. And now everybody's like, hey, within 5 years, we could have a few hundred thousand barrels per day more Venezuelan oil flowing. And the Saudis are still increasing their production. Doesn't provide a lot of confidence, especially as labor costs continue to go up and input costs continue to go up to produce this oil. That $58 number, that's going to get higher even as the price gets lower. That means less production here. Less domestic production. That's the knock-on effect of what happened in Venezuela. Yeah, cheaper gasoline, cheaper plastic, but it also means less U.S. producers producing. Even as that's going on, Japan's Mitsubishi to acquire shale gas assets in the U.S. for $7.5 billion. We're going to get a little short on time, so I'm going to blow through this one, guys. Gas and oil are no longer attached at the hip. Oil is about gasoline and about plastic. Gas is about electricity and about data centers. Japan buying $7.5 billion worth of natural gas assets in U.S. shale producers, mostly down south, even as U.S. shale oil producers are pulling back. It goes to show you the two markets heading in opposite directions. And even as that's going on, New York's offshore wind project to resume construction after judge lifts Trump's suspension. We talked about this one a couple of weeks ago, that President Trump had halted all offshore wind development on national security concerns. That's flimsy, guys. It's not like fighter jets or submarines are going to sneak up on the United States because of windmills. It just isn't going to happen. President Trump doesn't like wind, and so he canceled all the wind projects. And look, I didn't like it when the Democrats arbitrarily canceled all the gas pipelines and all the nuclear plants. So I don't like it when Republicans arbitrarily cancel offshore wind, which I personally don't like. I think they're stupid projects, that they're uneconomical. But if companies want to set their own money on fire, let them, as long as they don't take taxpayer subsidies, which a lot of them did. You can cut off the subsidies, but you can't order a nearly complete power plant to stop. That's just stupid. And so a judge predictably reversed that decision, and now they're going to resume construction on this and finish the project. Also, thank you to my friends at MacroWedge who put this one out yesterday. January PCE inflation and personal income report has been rescheduled for March. February PCE inflation and personal income report rescheduled for April. They are delaying the inflation numbers. And I got to send a shout out to Lox Ganapathy from Unicus Research. Came on the channel last week and we talked about this story about data throttling, inflation and jobs data and the accuracy and the availability of the data being one of her themes for 2026. And since we did that interview, since she released that report, we have seen now two stories to that effect in just a week. Now, what's the excuse? The government shutdown is over. Why are we delaying January and February inflation data? Maybe we're denying it because, I don't know, we're at war with the Fed and we want them to arbitrarily lower interest rates and print more money, regardless of what the inflation data says. And hey, if we don't report the inflation data, then it's Schrodinger's inflation data. It's both high and low at the same time. We can do whatever policy decisions we want and not be answerable for the consequences of it. This is just silly. We should be releasing this data on time. It's just too freaking important. Meanwhile, Sachs bonds worth just 1 cent hand hedge funds a painful lesson. Not just hedge funds and Amazon. The losses are starting to pile up from one of the most high-profile bankruptcies so far, and we're only 2 weeks into this year. At first glance, Sachs looked exactly like the kind of mess hedge funds love. Just months after the company borrowed $2.2 billion to finance its takeover of rival Neiman Marcus, the newly formed luxury retail powerhouse was already running short on cash. Creditors, spooked by the pace of the slide, rushed for the exits, offering the bonds for less than 40 cents on the dollar. Bargain-hunting hedge funds gleefully took the debt off their hands. That was, after all, a marquee name with valuable brands, prime real estate, big-name backers, and a business that executives said just needed a bit more time to steady itself. Firms including Pentwater Capital Management and Bracebridge Capital jumped in, chasing the promise of eye-popping returns. Much is still to be determined in the wake of Sachs' bankruptcy this week, including any recovery for its creditors. Yet in the meantime, the episode is shaping up to be a painful lesson in the dangers of trying to catch a falling knife. The bonds that distressed debt shops snapped up on the cheap are now being sold at less than 1 cent on the dollar. According to broker runs, the hundreds of millions in extra financing they provided, which sits in higher in the repayment pecking order, isn't faring much better, changing hands at around 10 cents. Pay attention, guys. All you guys, eventually, when the data center bankruptcies and the NeoCloud bankruptcies start, and everybody's like, oh, we can buy up this debt for cheap, and oh, this is a lot of value here, and oh, look at what it was trading at just a few weeks ago. We're going to make so much money catching this falling knife. Look what happened with Sachs. These guys thought they were getting a steal at 40 cents on the dollar. Now they're getting 1 cent on the dollar for it after the company filed Chapter 11. The company is also facing stiff objections from unsecured creditors, including Amazon, that are seeking to block access to the new financing package. The tech giant, which previously acquired a $475 million preferred equity stake in the luxury retailer, recently called its investment in Sachs presumptively worthless. Other equity holders, including Roan Capital and Insight Partners, also suffered significant losses, separate people familiar with the situation said. So look, at some point, Amazon's going to have to eat a $500 million charge related to their investment in Saks Fifth Avenue becoming worthless. So look for that one. I don't know if that'll show up in Amazon's next earnings report or not, but a lot of people losing a lot of money on Saks. Meanwhile, Porsche sales slumped the most in 16 years on poor China demand. Poor China demand and a stupid bet on electric vehicles. Porsche's deliveries fell 10% last year, the steepest drop since 2009, when the global financial crisis roiled markets following weak demand for electric vehicles and a slump in China. The Volkswagen luxury brand delivered 279,449 vehicles in 2025, it said on Friday, with China and Germany leading declines. Porsche said supply gaps for combustion engine versions of the 718 and the Macan Sport utility vehicle also hurt sales. Porsche has struggled with a range of challenges, including correcting an overly ambitious EV rollout that upended model plans and weighed on margins. Tariffs in the U.S., which has surpassed China as Porsche's most important market, have also weighed on profit. Yeah, Porsche made a stupid bet on electric vehicles. They stopped making combustion engines in big enough numbers, and now they're not selling cars. Who could have seen that one coming besides nobody? And look here, there's Porsche's decline in vehicle deliveries, the biggest since 2009, since Cash for Clunkers. Even the luxury car market, not immune to what's going on in autos here. In China, where local competition is becoming more intense, Porsche sales slumped 26%. The country's economic slowdown has hit consumers across income brackets, with protracted real estate crisis weighing on luxury spending. There's the wealth effect, guys. When homes become less valuable, people spend less money. You can see that in a 26% decline in China. Of course, at the same time, homegrown manufacturers like BYD, Xiaomi, and Huawei are targeting wealthier customers with premium materials as well as advanced software and battery technology. Premium German peers, BMW and Mercedes, also faced similar demand issues in the world's biggest auto market. So a combination of local competition and the wealth effect hurting those China sales. A bad bet on EVs in Europe. Porsche just had their worst year since 2009. Also, we got this news, a little bit of relief, emphasis a little bit, is on the docket possibly for farmers. Ag Republicans eye $15 billion farm aid package. The second tranche of farm aid money would include a carve out for specialty crop producers. Not going to spend too much time on this one, guys. There was a $12 billion package of farm aid that went through during the deal that ended the government shutdown. Most of that went to producers of row crops. Only about $1 billion went to the specialty crop producers, basically people who grow anything other than wheat, corn, and soybeans. Now $15 billion is being eyed for people who grow everything else. And again, this is what they're asking for. What are they actually going to get? We'll see. But potentially more help is on the way for farmers, especially those who were left out of the last package. And last but not least, we got a super chat about this one a couple of days ago, and I didn't have a good answer because I hadn't heard of this one. But we got this article in RTL today. Fraudsters flee Cambodia's scam city after accused boss is taken down. This is pretty crazy here. Hundreds of people dragged away suitcases, computer monitors, pets, and furniture as they fled a suspected Cambodian cyber fraud center after the country's most wanted alleged scam kingpin was arrested and deported. Boarding tuk-tuks, whatever they are, boarding tuk-tuks, Lexus SUVs, and tourist coaches, an exodus departed near Amber Casino in the coastal city of, all right, how do we say this? Suhanakville. Did I say that right? Suhanakville? All right, that's the word there. Okay, the coastal city of Suhanakville, one of the illicit trade's most notorious hubs. They're calling it Scam City. Cambodia is in upheaval, one Chinese man told AFP. Nowhere is safe to work anymore, he said on Thursday. God, you know, a guy can't even make an honest living ripping off Americans anymore. You know, how's an honest, hardworking, salt-of-the-earth kind of guy supposed to hack his way through this world scamming rich Americans and pig butchering scams? It's over for the little guy. Sorry, I don't shed any tears for this guy. Similar scenes played out at alleged scam compounds across Cambodia this week as the government said it was cracking down on the multi-billion dollar industry. But residents said many of the people working inside the tightly secured buildings moved out several days before the arrival of authorities, and an analyst dubbed it anti-crime theater. From hubs across Southeast Asia, scammers lure internet users globally into fake romantic relationships and cyber cryptocurrency investments. Initially largely targeting Chinese speakers, transnational crime groups have expanded operations into multiple languages to steal tens of billions of dollars annually from victims around the world. This was interesting. There was even a bank failure in Kansas. I can't remember the name of the bank, but I remember the CEO got caught up in a pig butchering scam involving cryptocurrency, and he embezzled tens of millions of dollars from the fund. What was the name of that bank? It was in Kansas. I cannot remember it. But it was most likely one of these scam centers out of Cambodia that was running that scam that caused a little bank failure and a hit to the deposit insurance fund. Those conducting the scams are sometimes willing con artists, sometimes trafficked foreign nationals who have been trapped and forced to work under threats of violence, slave labor in scam call centers. Yikes. AFP journalists visited several alleged internet scam sites in Sihanoukville in wake of the high-profile arrests in Cambodia and extradition to China of internationally sanctioned accused scam boss Chen Ji. Few of those departing the casinos, hotels, and other facilities were willing to speak to AFP, and none were willing to be identified due to concerns for their safety. Our Chinese company told us to leave straight away, said a Bangladeshi man outside the Amber Casino. But we'll be fine. There are plenty of other job offers from other scam centers, presumably. Studded with casinos and unfinished high-rises, the glitzy resort of Sihanoukville has become a cyber scam hotbed where thousands of people involved in the black market are believed to operate cons from fortified compounds. Before Chen was indicted last year by U.S. authorities who said his firm, the Prince Group, was a front for a transnational cybercrime network, the Chinese-born businessman ran multiple gambling hotels in Sihanoukville. A 2025 Amnesty International report identified 22 scam locations in the coastal resort out of a total of 53 in the country. More than half of these were scam call centers. Guys, this is a multi-billion dollar industry that uses slave labor to steal billions of dollars from people in the United States and all over the world, including the CEO of a bank who embezzled tens of millions of dollars from that bank. It's amazing I'm just hearing about this story now. I did get a super chat about this one a couple of days ago. I forget who gave it to us, but I don't remember the name. Thank you for whoever that was. I'm sorry I didn't have a better answer for you at the time, but holy shit, Scam City in Cambodia. And of course, it's you just know when you read Scam City that it's going to have Chinese fingerprints all over it. You just know it before you read it. And then, of course, the article confirms it. Hey, I just want to say thank you very, very much to Front Running the Masses, says a republic if you can keep it. Who was that? Was that Washington said that? What have you given us? A republic if you can keep it. It was either Washington or Jefferson, maybe Adams, one of those three, one of the founding fathers. But look, guys, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And, you know, if you can keep it, because sooner or later, all republics go down this route. They reach that identity crisis. And, you know, even Karl Marx, I can't stand the freaking guy. Was it Marx or Lenin? It was one of those famous commie schmucks who never worked a day in the private sector their whole life because they probably couldn't hack it. But they said, don't worry about democracy. Sooner or later, they'll figure out how to vote themselves each other's money, and that'll be the beginning of the end. Huh. Strikingly accurate. Isn't that kind of where we're at? I mean, are we in a democracy? Are we in a republic right now? Or are we in a kleptocracy? There was another story yesterday about some Congress lady who bought hundreds of thousands of shares of privately held XAI right but like days before XAI was announced a Pentagon contract. And by the way, if you read that story and you real quick had to Google which political party this congressperson belongs to before you figured out if you were outraged by the story or not, then congratulations on totally missing the point. The point is they're both scammers, both parties. They both do it. They both make things worse for the average person while pretending to give a shit about us. They don't. So, yeah, a republic if you can keep it. Thank you very much, Front Running the Masses, for being a Melonhead member for 6 months, sir. Appreciate the support of the channel. M. McMillan 601 says U.S. currency coins in silver, sell or collect. U.S. currency coins, are we talking about junk silver or are we talking about collector's coins? I stack. I don't collect. All right. Collector's coins, when you do collectors, you're getting into numismatic value. And ask any coin collector right now what has happened to numismatic value over the last year. It has evaporated. Numismatic coins, collector's coins are selling just marginally higher than the melt value of the metal in them. Because when you get big run up in prices, collector value goes away. And when you hit economic uncertainty and recession, collector value goes away. So if you derive enjoyment from collecting coins and you like talking about it and it's a hobby and it improves your quality of life, then collect coins. From an investing perspective, numismatic anything is a shit idea. That being said, U.S. currency coins in silver, junk silver, constitutional silver, the 90% pre-64 dimes, quarters, and halves. Make sure it's 90% halves, not the 40% ones. Those are a steal right now. You can still get them for below spot. Which, by the way, the fact that you can still get 90% junk for below spot kind of puts a damper on this whole there's no silver anywhere narrative that the coin dealers in particular are paying to get in front of you right now. If there is no silver anyway, anywhere, then why can you still get junk silver for less than spot? Why are the refiners turning it away if there's a shortage? It's because there is no shortage. All right. This is panic buying. This is FOMO that's going on right now. Read through the talking points, guys. I know that these people say patriotic and even religious things that get you to agree with them, and it makes you more inclined to agree with the next thing to come out of their mouth. But scrutinize what they're telling you. If there's really this big shortage of silver, then why is 90% junk silver still available below spot in a number of different places? Why are the refiners turning away junk and sterling silver if there's really a shortage? There isn't one. So I say 90% silver is actually a great deal here, even at these prices. That's this year, I have bought a lot of Eagles and I have bought a lot of Constitutional Silver. So that's the delineation. Be careful of numismatic value. Thank you very much. M. McMillan 601. Big Mouth Barry says, if the longer bond yields are rising despite the Federal Reserve cutting rates, couldn't this easily trigger a recession and a stock market crash? Easily. I would get rid of the easily there, but yes, it could. All right. Long-term inflation expectations are more of an informant of long-term interest rates than Federal Reserve policy, right? The Fed only affects the front end of the yield curve. They only affect the 1 month, the 2 month, their overnight rates. When they lower rates, that's what they're changing. Longer-term interest rates, especially when the Fed is lowering short-term rates into higher inflation, it makes people think inflation is going to come back. It's going to run hot. And then you look at gold and silver, $4,600, $90. And you say, yeah, inflation is going to be worse in a few years. No, I'm not going to lend money to the government for what? What are we at, like 3.8, 3.9? I don't even know where we're at on the 10-year. I should know that off the top of my head. Okay, just under 4.2. I was way off. No, I'm not going to lend money to the government at 4.2% interest. Not if I think inflation is going to be higher than that for the next 10 years. So I'm going to demand a higher interest rate. And so, yeah, higher interest rates also affects the flow of credit. It affects consumer credit cards, right? If the federal government is going to cap interest rate on credit cards at 10% and the interest rate on the 10-year is going to go up even more, those credit card companies are going to say, no, I'm not going to lend money to people at 10% interest. So credit could dry up. Credit dries up, consumerism slows down. Consumer spending drives the economy. Yep, now you're in a recession. Abso-freaking-lutely, Big Mouth Barry. That we could see that very much. And I would argue we have been in exactly that scenario since 2022. We've just pretended it wasn't happening. Thank you, Uncle Fedster as well. Says Doomberg called out a U.S. propane glut problem, a fivefold increase in production in less than two decades. You know, propane is a big one for people who are not on the grid, right? You know, you got that big propane tank underground. So if we've got too much propane, if it's looking like we're going to start building pipelines again, if there's going to be more big pipes built, more gas lines run on streets in America, then yeah, we've got a propane glut problem because it's a lot cheaper to hook up to the gas company than it is to fill a propane tank in your yard. So if, that's a big if the pipelines are really going to start getting laid and get built, then yes, we have a big glut of propane right now. But if the political winds shift, like they're very likely to, we could have somebody come in, you know, one of these like this commie chick in New York who says like, oh yeah, we need to, white middle-class Americans are a big problem. White middle-class homeowners, we need to take their houses away and give them to the collective. If idiots like that suddenly start making energy decisions, then there's not going to be any pipelines built and propane demand is going to be safe. And right now, the idiots like that are on the rise. They're probably going to see more power, not less, over the next few years. So do we have a propane glut right now? Maybe, maybe not. Is it going to get worse? Is going to depend on the political winds shifting. And right now, the political winds are shifting in a direction that is safer for propane. That being said, I have not studied the complexities of the propane market nearly as in-depth as a guy like Doomberg is likely to have done. So I would defer to Doomberg's judgment on that. Thank you very much, Uncle Fedster, for supporting the channel. Mish says, free reminder, MLK on Monday, no show. That's right, markets are closed on Monday. Thank you, Mish, for using your Melonhead super chat to remind us of that. No show on Monday, guys. You'll have to get your fix elsewhere. That being said, while we have the opportunity, Mish, again, holy crap, dude, on that Nobel Peace Prize thing. That's every now and then you really surprise me, and that was one time. That was incredible that you would call that a week before it actually happens. It's awfully specific. Maybe Mish has a time machine. I don't know. Thanks again, Mish. Stranglehold 4713 says, force 15-year bids while claiming fusion is coming. Fusion is coming 50 years from now. Fusion has been 50 years away for 50 years. That is why I am short DJT stock. Not because I didn't vote for the president. I did, but because DJT stock is a story and it is nothing else. There will not be a commercial fusion power plant operating in the United States by 2030. I would bet my entire net worth on that. It ain't happening. We have never had a fusion power plant anywhere in the world. The best fusion reaction we have ever held has maintained net energy gain for about a thousandth of a second. And that's only if you count the energy that you put into the lasers to generate that fusion, that little star. It doesn't account for all the other energy the facility used. It still was an energy loss. And we could only do that for about a thousandth of a second. And that was a monumental breakthrough, the biggest breakthrough in decades. And even that is not the same technology that TAE Technologies, the one that DJT stock just bought, is supposedly using. They're using this FRC. They're suspending a ball of, what was their fuel? It wasn't even the helium-3 that was used in the tokamak reactor that generated that thousandth of a second energy positive. It's some other fuel. I can't even remember off the top. But dang it, what was their fuel? Oh, boron. It's like a boron hydrogen mix that they're using to try to create a little star suspended in a plasma field, in an electric field, a plasma ball. It's never been done, not even for a fraction of a second. And they're like, oh yeah, we're going to start building a power plant this year. Bullshit. Sorry to be so strong in my reaction, but BS, guys. And look, I know they say never short a cult. That's good advice. But I would add the addendum, never short a cult unless you see that cult passing out Kool-Aid. And when I saw people bid up DJT stock by 40% in 2 days on that fusion story, that was the cult passing out Kool-Aid. And I was happy to short that one. Thank you very much. Stranglehold 4713. Miss Beth AZ, welcome to the Melonheads new member. Thank you so much for supporting the channel, Miss Beth. I appreciate that very much. Aussie Bay Fashion. What's going on, Aussie? He says at Perth Mint, 1 ounce silver coin in USD, $101 today. Guys, we have seen the premiums blow out in the last couple of days. $101, that doesn't mean the silver is $101 an ounce, right? That is the cost of the silver plus the premium they're charging. Not sure what the 1 ounce silver coin is. That's a pretty high premium, right? We're looking at like, what, $14, $15 at today's prices. Maybe a little bit of a numismatic on there, one of those collector ones. There's a lot of people will go, in particular, some of these websites that are borderline scammy, that are secretly run by bullion dealers, that, and they don't disclose it anywhere on the website. They'll go shop for the most expensive product for sale in Indonesia or Malaysia, some rare collector's item that's built around some religious holiday that they charge a big premium on. And then they'll be like, look, in Malaysia, silver's selling for $150 an ounce. That is not an apples to apples comparison. So be skeptical of stories like that and the motivations of the people telling you that story, all right? Gold and silver dealers are not immune to the trappings of greed. They're human beings like anybody else. There's honest ones, good ones, and there's dirtbags like any other field. Just because they say things about government spending and politics and religion that you agree with doesn't mean they're not greedy a-holes. All right, just keep that in mind. A lot of them prey on people by tapping into their pre-existing biases. I have seen this over and over again. It's not the first time they've done it. Thank you, Aussie Bay Fashion, for supporting the channel. Buck 40 Pool Genius. All right. Buck 40 Pool. There's a lot going on in that name. It says, no show Monday, silver over $100. Well, look, that's a good point. Mish, thank you for reminding us about no show Monday. And every time Jack tries to take a day off, something happens. Have you noticed that? Black Friday, day after Christmas, somehow I always end up on a spontaneous live stream with Bob because something happens in the metals industry on my day off. What the hell happens on Monday? Maybe we get a price slam into options expiration today, and then the price rips right back up on Monday. Who knows? But yeah, that sound you hear, and that's God laughing while Jack plans on a day off. Thank you very much, Buck 40 Pool Genius, for the laugh this morning and for supporting the channel. And Break My Wallet Motorsports, I love that name. He says, I told people to buy silver in 2022. They can now suck it, LOL. Well, I can tell you, I gave the one finger salute the other day to all the people who told me I was weird for buying the shiny in 2022. You know, we were, most of the silver I own, I bought in the mid 20s. I bought some in the low 30s. The most recent, I bought some at 60. That's as high as I went with the physical that I bought this year. But yeah, people looked at you funny. You're like, what? You buy silver bars? A lot of people said the pet rock, the crypto guys were like, oh, enjoy your pet rock. Okay, boomer. I bought Fartcoin. I mean, how's that working out for you? Yeah, I like the shiny. And just congratulations to the stackers. You have been patient. Some of you guys have been really patient. You guys who bought at 50 in 2011 and held it, holy shit, are you guys patient. Rip Van Winkle patient. Now you're being rewarded for your patience. Long overdue. And I don't know where we're going here, guys. We might be talking 100 by Monday. We might be talking 70 by the end of today. I don't know. It's options expiration when price slams tend to happen. We're in uncharted territory here. All I can say is it's been a hell of a ride, and it has been my pleasure to document this ride with you guys. It's been a heck of a show, hasn't it? Thank you very much, Break My Wallet Motorsports. Congratulations, sir. And yeah, all those people who gave you shit in 2022 for buying metal, you could suck it, man. Yeah. All right, guys. That's a good note to end on. Thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Thank you, guys, for the generosity in the Super Chats and my magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube. Patreon and buy me a coffee. Hey, it's Friday. That means 2 p.m. Eastern time today. We're getting together on Zoom for our weekly Q&A. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys. No show on Monday. See you guys Tuesday. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. I love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.